Excellent. Well, thanks again, those who organised the event, for the invitation. It's just really good to come and see what you're doing, and it's great to be a part of this sort of a series. You're doing exactly what you should be doing. I've got something living on me. Coming out of me, even. It's the sort of thing a group like this ought to be doing. If you're going to be a fellowship of Christians on a university campus, then you ought to be spending your time learning from those who are coming here to learn and listening to those who are here to be sharing their thoughts and ideas and forming them. If you really want to meaningfully have anything to say to a group like this, then it's really important that you take the time to listen as well. And that's the spirit of this series. It's been a group that has taken the time to listen and learn and has taken the time to be moved and provoked and challenged by the sorts of comments and criticisms that when people think about Christians, that's what they think about. If it's a Rorschach test, then the responses that people have when you hold up the ink blot, which is the Uni Fellowship of Christians, we've got the responses that people have to that test. So it's valuable. I hope it has been valuable for the Christians to do this series. And across the month or so it's been running, I think it really has made an impact on many here on the university. I've heard comments from students, I've heard comments from people within this group, I've heard comments from lecturers across the campus who have been struck with and impressed by the fact that you've made a gesture of courtesy, a gesture of real desire to engage, and that sort of thing. I think it's a great way to start a new year with a new name and new branding. It just makes a lot of sense. And it's quite funny, I spent some time praying for a university student group in France, which in many ways is one of the most kind of non-religious countries in the world, along with Australia. And in the same time, in the same way, this series is taking place in Paris at the moment, which is quite an interesting thought, the same desire to say, what's your problems with us? What's your beef with us? We want to think and respond. That's exactly what they've been doing. Of course, the responses have been a little bit less UTAS and a little bit more sort of French philosopher, but, you know, that's what you would expect if you were going to do student ministry in France, I suppose. Their last session, thank you very much for the invitation, and then this last session is, the problem with Christianity is the Christian lifestyle. Comments have been, some of them that we've collected up have been like this. The problem with Christianity is you dress badly. The problem with Christianity is you don't put out. The problem with Christianity is Christians keep to themselves. Where to start? Lol. The problem with Christianity is the person that put up this poster. The problem with Christianity is societies like this one. The problem with Christianity is you don't seize the day. The problem with Christianity is you dress badly. The Christian dress could be described perhaps something like this. The polar fleece jumper, perhaps the jeans and the sneaker. Perhaps the sandal and sock if one has a calling for missionary work. Perhaps the Beatrix Potter sock. Perhaps the glasses rather than the contact lens. But it's not just the clothes, is it? It can go beyond that. Christianity has our own sort of music. And I don't just mean that the multi-million dollar Christian music industry, of which there is one, and of which Guitar Hero was stupid not to create Guitar Hero Christian. They would have made so much more money. I even read a geek comic online that was written by a non-Christian kind of nerd who was saying, I can't believe they left that market open for the Christians to make the money off it. Guitar Hero should have done it. Idiot geek, you should have done it. But it's not just Christian music I'm talking about. I'm talking about bands, and there is a sort of band, the sort of spiritual band. Live? U2? Coldplay? John Butler Trio, there's a certain sort of band that's the Christian culture band. There's all sorts of other things as a part of the Christian lifestyle. Perhaps the massage chain, you know, where I massage your shoulder and you massage the next person's shoulders. Indoor soccer, tea and fellowship, scrapbooks, The Lord of the Rings, The Princess Bride. There's even an American website called, a blog called Stuff Christian Culture Likes, which just rolls it all out for you. The kind of things that we find particularly exciting. The way we love a certain type of gothic font on our advertising and so on and so on and so on. It seems like a kind of cheap question in a way, doesn't it? The problem with Christianity is you dress badly. And yet there is, let's try and put it, to try and capture, that there is something real in there, I think. And for me, I can definitely relate. That was one of my big, if I really had to boil it down, through high school, I hadn't come from a Christian home, and so I looked in on Christianity from outside, and I'd probably have to say that one of the issues I had with the Christian faith was the Christian life. There is this kind of jarring, this cognitive dissonance between what Christians say and even some of the quite good arguments they may have for what they say and then what they do with what they say. I'm not talking hypocrisy here. I'm just talking mundanity. I'm talking banality. I'm talking, you believe in a creator of all things who came to save the world, and so you scrapbook and watch Shrek and so forth. Why does the devil get all the good music? If God was really there and he is the great creator, then why is it that the best music and the greatest art is by people who don't honour him and worship him? It's that kind of question, isn't it? It's the question of the existentialism, which is such a strong kind of maybe cultural hunch that many of us have. We have a kind of cultural hunch towards existentialism, towards a fear of oppression, a fear of being just limited and put in a little limiting box and a limiting life. Like that film that's just come out, The Revolutionary Road, which is again about that kind of, I feel I'm special and yet here I am in the suburbs, right? Christianity is like the suburb religion, an oppressive religion in its lifestyle. So it may be true, but man, it can't be true, because if it were true, it would look better in practice. You kind of getting the feel of what I'm trying to say? Now, that might be a hard thing for some of you as Christians to really relate to, because you like it. And it's nice. And I suppose compared to chain smoking and playing pokies, it's a much more attractive lifestyle. It's so fantastic. I don't want to downplay those things in and of themselves, but you can't criticise someone until you've walked a mile in their shoes, because then you're a mile away and you have their shoes. You've got to actually walk in the shoes of the people on this campus and hear what they're saying. And what they're saying is, I'm not listening to what you're saying, all I'm doing is looking at your t-shirt. If what you're saying was true, that's the kind of, strange to you it might be, but that's how people can think. So let me try and respond to that in a very optimistically named 20 minutes. Your clock is probably wrong, so don't panic about the time. And your mobile phone is probably still on loud, so you might want to sort of turn that on to silent so it doesn't start playing sort of some sort of daggy Coldplay song during the sermon. Let me just take 3 points and answer this stuff. Let me try and give an explanation for the Christian life. Let me try and give a justification for it. And then let me close by showing the direction of it. Firstly, why Christians dress badly, an explanation for the Christian life. Just a couple of things quickly. One, it could simply be a cultural phenomenon in the Western world, in the culture of the last 100 or so years. Christians happen to have landed on the wrong side of cool in the Western world. It may not be anything inherent about Christianity, but a freak of culture. Could be that. Secondly, perhaps some of us just haven't met enough Christians. And so if you look en masse at the Christian religion, then it may look daggy, but maybe if you don't know enough members, then that would change what you saw. So without wanting to say everything about some of these churches are right, it would be very hard to walk into a church like Hillsong and deny the fact that many of the people there are extremely cool people. It would be very hard to go to a church such as Mars Hill in Seattle and deny that many of those people are very cool people. There are cool Christians. The problem is, if they are cool, then the argument shifts and it becomes, are they tryhards? They're trying to be cool. So you can't really win, perhaps. Thirdly, Christianity doesn't, in the end, really stake itself upon whether it's cool or not anyway. And maybe that's part of the reason why then Christians let themselves go. Because it doesn't matter to God. It really doesn't matter to God whether I'm cool or not. It doesn't matter millions of years into eternity whether the cool kids talk to me in class. It really doesn't matter or not whether the beautiful chick in first year intro to law actually likes my jeans and sneakers or not. It just doesn't matter. It's not an issue. And so you have passages like, this is a passage from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, which I think puts quite well the beauty of the love of a God who doesn't look at the brand of your clothing before having time for you. This is what 1 Corinthians chapter 1 says. Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many of you were influential. Not many of you were of noble birth. Not many of you were cool. Not many of you were cute. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of the world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are. God delights in finding the thing that everyone else has looked over. God delights in honouring the wallflower. And so that is something that is held very deeply and very dearly to the Christian faith. And so, a final comment under this head. Christians ought not commit themselves to being absorbed in a pursuit of cool. It's not the crowning goal and ideal. Christians believe in a life after death. They believe in a God. They believe that there is a purpose to life. And so what a small thing to be living my whole life caught up and absorbed in a fashion industry that at one time very recently thought it was a good idea for men to wear pink polo shirts. What a small thing it would be to live my life pursuing the concerns and interests of people that aren't even particularly likeable, nice, concerned individuals whatsoever. Maybe already some of you have looked back on your high school years and can see the way you have ruined friendships with wonderful people for the sake of shallow friendships with the in crowd. And how many of you, when you look on those sorts of broken relationships now, you realise that your daggy friend that you knew since primary school was actually, at the end of the day, way cooler anyway. Because cool is not really about whether you have a Joe Hawk or not. It's not really about the clothes you wear or the groups you're in or not. But true cool, if you like, is something about integrity and honesty, so forth. Why Christians dress badly, there's something of a step towards explaining it. My second thing is trying to give a justification for the Christian lifestyle more broadly. Why Christians don't put out a justification for the Christian life. Now, in all that I'm about to say, I'm not denying that Christians, like everybody else, struggles with their values and how those values relate to their experiences and with competing priorities and desires in their lives. Every Christian has times when they just wish they weren't. And every Christian has times when they don't live as they ought. And yet, I'm speaking, perhaps, if you like, in the broad brushstrokes about the Christian life. Even though, ultimately, this is another disclaimer, Christianity isn't primarily about just a lifestyle. It's not even just primarily about a morality. And yet, let me try and give some broad brushstrokes about the Christian lifestyle. I want to say that properly understood, properly involved and absorbed and reacted with, the Christian lifestyle is a wonderful lifestyle. And that Christian lifestyle is not actually shaped and bound merely by rules and regulations and cultural norms. There's no one monolithic expression of the Christian faith so that you all have to like this, do this, be this sort of personality. It's just not the way it is. Sadly, church can sometimes force that. You know, people do that, don't they? You could go into a punk rock scene all about freedom and liberation and everyone is dressed exactly the same. People do that. We push to conformity because we're unimaginative. But in and of itself, Christianity is not about one regulated lifestyle. It's instead about learning to live as you were created to be. Learning to find the will and plan of the architect and designer of the world. Learning to live in harmony with the one who designed all things and in harmony with all things around you. And so, properly acted out, Christianity ought to produce a harmony with your environment, a harmony with your fellow man and woman, and a harmony with your maker. A beautiful life in which to live. The desire of Christianity is for the flourishing of humanity under God. Jesus himself said his mission was to encourage and bring life to the full. Or in 1 Peter chapter 3, the book of Proverbs is quoted. And we are told in 1 Peter chapter 3, this is just a citation you can look up in your own time, but whoever among you would love life, whoever among you would love life and see good days, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from deceitful speech. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. And there are many other passages where this sort of thing is taught, in a sense, in general terms, to say, if you know God and live in his world the way he intended for it to work, things are going to go well for you. If you're a stubborn male and you insist on driving to one of these impossible new kind of housing developments in Kingston where everything's called Tranquility this and, you know, Hill Forest that, and you insist on finding the new neighbour's house there without a map, then you're going to be going round and round these endlessly same-ish streets and you'll be lost. If you have the humility to listen to your girlfriend or your wife or the female friend in the car who says, use the map, then you may actually find where you need to go on Summer Hill Crest Crescent. It's not missing out to be a Christian. It's not merely oppressive and flattening. But it's finding how to live well in God's world. It's moving. It might not taste as delicious immediately at first because it's something much deeper, much stiller, much more profound. It's the move from McDonald's to Marilla. It's the move from Launceston to Hobart. It's the move from PC to Mac. There is something just far better and more graceful and more wholesome about the whole experience. God made all things to work well, and God has spoken to us in his word to show us how they work well. One famous and influential theologian and pastor today can even speak of Christian hedonism, that God finds delight in us when we are satisfied in him. Now that's pretty radical and strange sort of stuff to say, and for many people it just doesn't have the ring of truth about it. Why? Possibly, very, very possibly, some may have been hurt, and we've talked about that in previous weeks, yes. But for some of us, it's not because we've been hurt by Christians, but it's because TV and the general cultural zeitgeist says Christians are boring and depressing. That's really, if we're honest, why? Because isn't everyone knows it? That's why. To which it just has to be said, you know, marriage can't work. I know. How do you know? Because I tell you, I guess. You know, and living a life that's just moral and good, that doesn't work. How do you know? Well, I don't know. I guess movies, I suppose. I'm not really sure. And so much of that we just inherit, a certain romantic view of life we inherit about how the world works, more or less from television. Now, you're young men and women, you're heading out on the road to academic higher learning, so this isn't beyond you, I'm sure. You don't have to believe everything that's on television. Sprite does not quench your thirst. It's too full of sugar. And women who have their periods don't want to run around on the beach in white and happy and smiling. They don't feel like that just because they have Libra. It's not the way the world actually works. It's just not like that. Doctors are not all stunningly beautiful, able to deliver great emotional speeches at the drop of the hat, and all totally sexually involved with one another in deeply complicated ways. People can't, average lovers can't afford to fill bedrooms full of roses. How much would that cost? New Yorkers don't live in flats as big as the flats on Friends. You don't have to believe, you don't, I hope you don't, as students of higher education, don't believe everything you see on television. And yet that can often be where the picture of the Christian moral life comes from. That it is all, I watch the Beach Boys film clip and they're happy. And that's right, because if you just have California girls and you surf, you're always happy. Go and read a biography about the Beach Boys and see how sad the lives of those surfing boys really was. It's deeply saddening. The promiscuous lifestyle is so free, it's driven by love and romance and the one I want and the person whose eyes sparkle and it's all just so, at the moment she's the one and it's just special. But long term, a promiscuous lifestyle of multiple partners is depressing. And often it's actually deeply sexist as well, it's the woman who loses out. The drug lifestyle at first looks so good, looks so satisfying, looks so free and gives you new revelations. But man, even if you ask the people in the middle of the drug lifestyle, they're not going to be talking that way as if they're free. Jarvis Cocker, when he came out of rehab, you know, from the band Pulp in the 90s, when he came out of rehab, he said this, extremely funny kind of guy. So you've got to picture this very weedy sort of British pasty kind of man with enormous enormous eyeglasses, that kind of character, right? Like a missionary kid, perhaps. And he says, you don't often hear people say, oh, since he's taken them drugs, he's such a nice person. He's really come out of his shell. He's really nice. He's really blossomed as a person. Living for the moment and living always for those special moments, watching plastic bags blowing in the wind and shouting down abysses in the rain and accidentally putting garden gnomes on aeroplanes and all this sort of stuff, as if the world really works that way, ends in a life where you're constantly waiting for something and abusing what God's given you, abusing the things you do have, in wanting something to come. It's a sad way to live. It's a disappointing way to live. It is a disappointing way to live. And some of the best experiences in life are actually found and discovered in things such as contentment, service to the needs of others, persistence and perseverance in the day-to-day. That the true test of a life well lived is a test of how you cope with boredom, how you cope with duty, how you cope with disappointment. True beauty, true romance is seen in that stuff, not the cheap replacements. You cannot solve things just with a new job, or with a new drug, or with a new lover, or with travelling to a new country. You just cannot change things with a new hairstyle and with a new group of friends and with a new degree. You cannot change things because wherever you go. No matter what you do and where you go and how far you travel and how interesting it is and what great stories you have and what you've got, you know, you can show people, no matter where you go, you're still going to be there. You can't get away from you. You need to instead face you. A pastor right in the centre of Manhattan, Tim Keller, says this about his children growing up in the centre of Manhattan. He says, one of my sons, when he hit teenage years, began talking about all the clubs and the limelight and the excitement of the big city. And he wanted to go, and if he wasn't so short for his age, he probably would have gone and tried to get into the clubs and so on. And at a church picnic, he was talking about this, and someone in the church overheard, a young, single guy in the church, a talent agent in Manhattan, someone who knew all the actors and all the celebs, right? And this is what he said to this pastor's son. I've been to the limelight. I can tell you all about it. I'll take you there. I can get you in, because they really don't care. And I'll show you the rooms where people are having sex, and I'll show you the rooms where people are using cocaine, and it is so unhappy. It is just so unhappy situation. I've been there. I'm through that. But if you want to see that, I'll take you. And finally, I wanted to speak briefly about the direction the Christian life heads in. The problem with Christianity is you dress badly, you don't put out. The problem with Christianity is societies like this. You guys are the problem. But I want to speak and explain and describe what a fellowship of Christians looks like. And so that in some ways gives you an interpretive grid to understand where the Christian life is going. Because the Christian life is not just men's ministries and denim dresses and polo shirts. It's not just the same things that Republicans and Mormons and Hutchins parents like. That's not all that Christianity is about. It has a direction to it. It's best understood in perspective. The Christian life is about living in a world God made. All things in this world are God's. And so in the Christian life is a yes to the world. And yet it's living in a world that is a fallen world, where the human race has pulled away from God in rebellion. And so at the same time, the Christian life is a critique of the world. Everything was made by God, so yes, even the most perverted culture has its foundations in the goodness of God. But the world is fallen, so even Christian culture is perverted and corrupted. And yet God came to save, redeem. God came into the world. He became one of us. God became one of us and so said, yes, I'm alongside you. God died amongst us. And in many ways, the cross of Christ is a great no and a critique and a criticism of human pride and arrogance. And yet God rose. In history, Christ rose. At Easter, Christ rose. A guy just said to me this morning, isn't it a great coincidence the way Jesus got born at Christmas time and he rose at Easter? That's a proof Christianity is true. He was joking, of course, but Jesus rose at Easter. A yes to the created world. He rose physically. He didn't fly up to heaven as a spirit. He rose physically. And God will come and make all things new in a physical world. And so Christians now, we live out the life of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We live out in a world saying no to the world which has fallen, but yes to the world that God has made and God is saving. In a sense, part of the Christian lifestyle, living in worship in God's world, is a cultural project. What does it mean to be a joyful servant of God in this world? A fallen world, yes, but a world made by Him. What does that look like? There is a project, a worship project, and we look forward to the day of glorification, not just making an empire of Christianity here, but looking ahead to satisfaction in the future. So the Christian world is a one that has purpose, direction, meaning, higher priorities. The Christian life is not just junk you chuck on your MySpace. See, I like this, saw that, read this, my favourite band is that, I wear those sneakers. It's not just a bunch of junk cluttered around your soul that kind of makes you who you are. But the things in your life are weapons of worship. They're all, in a sense, holy things to you because you are living in God's world for God's glory. And within that, and this is one more thing I'll say before I close, I have no idea how far over time I've gone. One more thing is to say that there is a sense of mission at the heart of Christianity, which is part of why an event like this one has been held on campus the last month, why a group like this one exists on campus in the last month. We're not just here to help Christians be Christians at uni. Churches do that perfectly fine. We are here because we have a sense of mission and burden for the uni. A loving longing to interact with our fellow students on the campus. A desire to bring the salvation of Christ to others. And so the Bible can speak in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 as just one example of saying, though I'm free and I don't belong to anyone, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. And my cultural peculiarities I'm willing to bend and to shape. The things I would like to spend my life doing as a Christian, I'm willing to give those up in order to come alongside another person and reach them. Although I'd rather do this, I'm willing to do that in order to come alongside and share the things that God has done for me. I'm not a slave to my culture and just living there. And if other people join, that's fun. That's nice too. But I'm wanting to be a host and a prophet and a herald and a person who goes out of where it's comfortable to those who are in deep need, to my fellow men and women who are in deep need, and to share with them. So how are you going to spend your life is the question. Of course, it must be the question that all of us must take the time to ask. How are you going to spend your life? What actually is going to consume you as a priority? Christianity does not say just going to church and joining youth group and doing massage chains and listening to John Butler. It doesn't just say that. Just living a little life with little friends and a little degree and get a little sort of Christian family and just press on. It's just not that. That's not Christianity. That's churchianity perhaps. But it's to lift my eyes higher to see that my prayers and my goals and my giving and my time and my desire is to bring worship to God who made me, to love and care for my fellow humans and my world, and to proclaim a message of eternity into time. That's the Christian calling, and it's a calling to you if you are a Christian, to repent of your self-centeredness and live for that. And it's exactly the same calling to the uni. It's not just become a Christian because it's true, and then, I don't know, join us as we watch Shrek. But it's become a Christian because it's true, and join us as we love and seek to save a dying world. Now, do I have any time for questions at this point?
Yeah, we've done well.
Only 22? Okay, I'll just keep going. So there's a time for questions and interaction, if that would be helpful. Please don't be afraid to chuck up your hands. You could also contact through email and ask questions that way. I really hope this isn't, in a way, just something that ends today. I hope it really is a symbol of what this uni fellowship stands for across the year, that this is what we're wanting to keep being about, and we're free and available to keep having questions about this stuff. Because I am sure you're going to have a lot of people downloading those books over the coming time. And so it would be a shame for everyone else to keep